Evening. We've come to the chapter that when I think of this book, is the one that I always remember. I think because when I first read it, 35 years ago, something like that, it made me dizzy. I'd never really thought about the world like this. And it took me a long time to get used to the idea. It's not really an idea, it's the actual truth of things, but it's not the way we usually think of our life. It's just another expression of form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. But this personalizes it and realizes it in a way that we can picture. So it's a very vivid little essay that he's expressed here. So let's read it. Anybody have a copy? Oh, okay, let's start on this side. Whoever has the book. 92.
Nirvana, the waterfall. Our life and death are the same thing. When we realize this fact, we have no fear of death anymore, no actual difficulty in our life. If you go to Japan and visit Eiheiji Monastery, just before you enter, you will see a small bridge called Hanshaku-kyo, which means half-dipper bridge. Whenever Dogen Zenji dipped water from the river, he used only half a dipper full, returning the rest to the river again, without throwing it away. That is why we call the bridge Hanshaku-kyo, half-dipper bridge. At Eiheiji, when we wash our face, we fill the basin to just 70% of its capacity, and after we wash, we empty the water towards, rather than away from, our body. This expresses respect for the water. This kind of practice is not based on any idea of being economical. It may be difficult to understand why Dogen returned half of the water he dipped to the river. This kind of practice is beyond our thinking. When we feel the beauty of the river, when we are one with the water, we intuitively do it in Dogen's way. It is our true nature to do so. But if your true nature is covered by ideas of economy and efficiency, Dogen's way makes no sense.
I went to Yosemite National Park and I saw some huge waterfalls. The highest one there is 1,340 feet high, and from it the water comes down like a curtain thrown from the top of the mountain. It does not seem to come down swiftly as you might expect. It seems to come down very slowly because of the distance. And the water does not come down as one stream, but is separated into many tiny streams. From a distance, it looks like a curtain, and I thought it must be a very difficult experience for each drop of water to come down from the top of such a high mountain. It takes time, you know, a long time, for the water finally to reach the bottom of the waterfall. And it seems to me that our human life may be like this. We have many difficult experiences in our life, but at the same time I thought the water was not originally separated, but it was one whole river. Only when it is separated does it have some difficulty in falling. It is as if the water does not have any feeling when it is one river, one whole river. Only when separated into many drops can it begin to have or to express some feeling. When we see one whole river, we do not feel the living activity of water, but when we dip a part of the water into a dipper, we experience some feeling of the water, and we also feel the value of the person who uses the water. Feeling ourselves in the water in this way, we cannot use it in just a material way. It is a living thing.
Before we were born, we had no feeling. We were one with the universe. This is called mind only, or essence of mind, or big mind. After we are separated by birth from this oneness, as the water falling from the waterfall is separated by the wind and rocks, then we have feeling. You have difficulty because you have feeling. You attach to the feeling you have, without knowing just how this kind of feeling is created. When you do not realize that you are one with the river or one with the universe, you have fear. Whether it is separated into drops or not, water is water. Our life and death are the same thing. When we realize this fact, we have no fear of death anymore, and we have no actual difficulty in our life.
When the water returns to its original oneness with the river, it no longer has any individual feeling to it. It resumes its own nature and finds composure. How very glad the water must be to come back to the original river. If this is so, what feeling will we have when we die? I think we are like the water in the dipper. We will have composure then, perfect composure. It may be too perfect for us just now, because we are so much attached to our own feeling, to our individual existence. For us, just now, we have some fear of death. But after we resume our true original nature, there is nirvana. That is why we say, to attain nirvana is to pass away. To pass away is not a very adequate expression. Perhaps to pass on, or to go on, or to join would be better. Will you try to find some better expression for death? When you find it, you have quite a new interpretation of your life. It would be like my experience when I saw the water in the big waterfall. Imagine it was 1,340 feet high.
We say everything comes out of emptiness. One whole river or one whole mind is emptiness. When we reach this understanding, we find the true meaning of our life. When we reach this understanding, we can see the beauty of human life. Before we realize this fact, everything that we see is just illusion. Sometimes we overestimate the beauty. Sometimes we underestimate or ignore the beauty because our small mind is not in accord with reality.
To talk about it this way is quite easy, but to have the actual feeling is not so easy. But by your practice of Zazen, you can cultivate this feeling. You sit with your whole body and mind, and with oneness of your mind and your body under the control of the universal mind, you can easily attain the kind of right understanding. Your everyday life will be renewed without being attached to the old, erroneous interpretation of life. When you realize this fact, you'll discover how meaningless your old interpretation was and how much useless effort you've been making. You'll find a true meaning of life, and even though you have difficulty falling upright from the top of the water fill to the bottom of the mountain, you will enjoy your life.
Feet high. Very big deal about that. That was very cute. A friend of mine died 7 years ago now, Naylee Scott. Quite suddenly, she just got sick, and then it was over. And everyone was in a great state of shock, including me. And then I had this vision, this kind of vision. I saw her, he says, passing on, but I always think of Emily Dickinson's Gone Back. I saw her, you know, rising and going back wherever she came from. And at the same time, I saw thousands of other people doing the same thing. When we lose somebody, it's not the only one. People are dying every minute, constantly. And at the same time, I saw through this crowd of beings going back, were all these other beings coming in, all the little babies pouring into the earth and getting ready to get born. That's the truth of what's happening every moment. If we spend some time in a hospital, we can actually experience it somewhat. You go to one floor and there are all the babies crying in their bassinets and their little plastic bins. And then you go to another floor and people are passing away. We don't usually think of the river. We usually think of the individual. And until we think of the river, death seems like a very disturbing and upsetting event to contemplate, not just our own, but anybody else's. It's hard to take for us as individuals. Not just that it's hard to say goodbye forever, but just that such a thing could happen. We seem so solid and so complete. Life seems so fixed in a way. We can say, my body, my life, my house, my car, my husband, my wife, my... It seems like everything is ours and is given and it has no end. So it takes another kind of view to see the river. And Zazen is that experience, of course. Sometimes. When we begin to sit, our minds are filled with everything that we're concerned about, everything that's interesting, everything we want to get rid of, it's all there. But as we sit and begin to get familiar with how our mind is working, we begin to feel more and more connected with everything. When Buddha first taught this, he taught it by saying that, by pointing out how ephemeral and how messy and inconvenient and unpleasant being a body was. He said, just examine your life and see how hard it is to be a body and how unpleasant it is in this way and that way and this way. Some of his monks took it completely literally and killed themselves. So, oh, nirvana, yeah, that's much better. Let's get out of here. Let's get out of here fast. So I think that's why Suzuki Roshi is talking. To attain nirvana is to pass away. But when you find it, you will have a quite new interpretation of your life. It isn't that you want to get out as fast as possible, but that the view is so large, so breathtaking, imagine 1,340 feet high, how big it is, and how small we are. And yet, the whole thing goes on. So that depending on prajna, which is what the Heart Sutra says, the bodhisattva depends on prajna paramita, and no fears exist. He's talking about these basic fears. You could say that prajna is another word for the river. The deep life force and wisdom and love that's pouring through the world. That we depend on, whether we know it or not. If we don't know it, then we're always imagining that we're calling the shots. Once we begin to realize it, we can offer ourselves more and more to the whole process of life itself, the whole rich process of falling, trying to fall upright down the whole face of a mountain. It's all the same river. And for water to be the metaphor, I think, is very fitting, since we're so much water, literally so much of our body is made of water, and we depend upon it so much. It's one of those invisible things that we take for granted, like air, that is so precious to us, that we are. So this is a very, it doesn't make me dizzy anymore. It's because it's just one increment of falling every moment. We're not falling, it's not one big picture, it's just one tiny little increment every single moment. We don't know when we reach the river at the bottom and flow on. All we know is this falling. But it doesn't feel like we're rushing through the air, usually. It's just this moment, and then the next one, and then the next. But someday we'll reach that bottom of the mountain and just flow straight back into the river again. And as he says, it might just feel wonderful. This is how useless effort you've been making. It's what I said last week about my friend worries, how he decided not to worry anymore. It's a useless effort. I keep trying to do that too. I'm not doing very well. Just got to keep trying. So are there comments about this? Questions? That bridge is still there, that half-dipper bridge at Aheji. There's just a little stream that runs through these dark, dark trees, these huge ancient cypress, I think, aren't they? Big old cypress trees. So it's dark and mossy, and then this little stream runs through and this little wooden bridge.
He talks about like the little drops, kind of like being, the word, I know it's not the exact word, but basically this resistance to falling, the drops, feeling as they're going to hit bottom. But kind of gets me thinking, like, so, like, yearning for freedom, it just feels very two-sided, like, you know, this yearning for freedom, but then knowing at some point, you know, since I do perceive myself to be, like, an individual, so to speak, or, you know, there's this sense that, you know, person with kind of figure, you know, what you're going to do with your life, so to speak. It seems like yearning for freedom and also kind of not wanting any of it, you know? Like, or
yes.
It feels kind of, I don't like it.
Well, if you think about it too hard, it's very unpleasant. If you posit life, the other side of it is death. You know, our minds work that way. If we bring up one side, the other side comes up with it. It's true of war and peace, too. You posit peace, there's war right there with it, because that's what it means. They define each other. So calling it life and death already creates a problem. It's better not to. It's easier on us to think of it as being the one river of which we're a part, and not struggle against it. But Buddha said, and psychotherapists, psychologists are now saying also, that we carry in us a great desire for life, and also a desire not to be alive. And Buddha said that was his second, part of his second noble truth, that's one of our problems, that we lust for life, and we also sometimes lust for death. And in either case, we're going overboard. That we don't have a big enough picture.
So it's kind of natural to, like, whine?
It's natural to whine.
Don't get you. I was just thinking about the Bob Dylan. There's this Bob Dylan song, I Shall Be Released.
Yes.
And it just seems so gratuitous. I mean, and I don't want, and I don't say.
Well, a lot of the old Negro spirituals are about release. You know, swing low, sweet chariot, coming for to carry me home. So, it's death is very kind at the end. Often, if the end is, you know, if you're old or you're enslaved, or something, you know, your life is very, very difficult. It's kind. They say pneumonia is the old person's friend because it makes it so easy. It's a fascinating subject, really. And of course we don't want to die. No, we do resist it. Suzuki Roshi said when he was dying, I don't want to die. Felt it was much too soon. And it wasn't any fun either. It hurts often. So where is this nirvana that the bodhisattva dwells in? Do you think it is? Sometimes they say it's like a blown out candle. But it's hard to see that because the next explanation is that the best way to live is by the Eightfold Path, the Noble Path. So it doesn't mean literally dying, but it does mean stepping away from small-mindedness. Small mind is one way, one thing. That's how we can say who we are and be that completely. But small-mindedness is clutching onto ourself and aggrandizing and cultivating ignorance about our true place in the world. Maybe we could say nirvana is finding our true place in the world. And then parinirvana is when we finally step away from the form, being a form in the world. We don't know what happens next. We just know the forms disappear. Someone asked me about teachers the other day. Did I have any other teachers beside Koban? And I said, no. I said, he's still my teacher. No, I don't feel like he's ever gone anywhere. He's still teaching. But if I tried to explain it, I couldn't. Yes.
Could you talk more about a place in the world and a place in the world? What do you mean by that?
Seems like there's a way of going against, it's kind of paradoxical because there's the way everything is going and we can just go along with everything. And there's the way of connecting to the whole thing rather than the partial way, which means actually, they say sometimes going upstream in order to take your place, to find your place. It doesn't mean just going along with everything. This gets away from the waterfall metaphor completely because the waterfall just goes one way. But in practice, we actually go against the flow of the general life in society, life in on automatic, you could say. As we wake up, we begin to hook into something else, to life itself, and allow it to carry us. I mean, it's always carrying us, but we can fight it or we can go with it. There are times when we say, I have no choice, I have to do this. I don't even know why sometimes, but I have to do this. That kind of place is what I mean. And of course, the world wants us to explain and justify what we do, and sometimes we can't. I mean, I have to marry this person, or I have to go up this mountain. It's calling me. It calls us in some way. Well, it's 8 o'clock.